afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this special Cisco seminar, to which we're very pleased to welcome Dr. Tomi Wasserman, who is a most appropriate choice to kick off this Hooray for Hurtado festival that we are beginning today, since they share a number of things, including a serious interest in text criticism, grounded in a very serious theological interest in the text and its importance. And they also share a dazzling and frightening, to those of us who are technologically challenged, familiarity with new media of communication. Dr. Wasserman, is, of course, a regular contributor to various blog sites, including Evangelical Text Criticism, a regular poster there. So we welcome him very much and look forward to hearing about Mark 1:1.
Thank you very much. The crucial text-critical problem in the opening of the Gospel of Mark has been much debated. The main question is whether the phrase Son of God, Hu Thu, was accidentally omitted from an initial text that read Arche tu Evangelio Jesu Christu Hu Thu, or added by a scribe in order to expand the divine name or the title of the book. Eldon Epp, who by the way was Larry's supervisor, he captures well the issue at stake here, and I'm citing Eldon Epp. To rule it out, the phrase, that is, might be to remove from the opening sentence the author's dramatic announcement of a major theme for the entire work that follows. The disputed words are enclosed in square brackets in the UBS 4 and Nestle Aland 27, and they are omitted from the recent SBL GNT. Most modern translations and commentators include the words. Recently, however, several scholars, most notably Peter Head, Bart Ehrman, and Adela Yarbrough-Collins, have argued for the shorter version of Mark 1:1. Perhaps the strongest argument in favor of the short reading, which was first brought forth by Jan Slomp and subsequently developed by Head and Ehrman, is the unlikelihood of an accidental omission in the opening words of a work. We will return to this question shortly. First, we shall examine the external evidence. And on your handouts, you have a summary of the external evidence. As you can see, I hope, the long reading, first reading, has overwhelmingly strong manuscript support, whereas patristic and versional evidence is ambiguous and requires further evaluation. Apart from Papyrus 45, which is not extant in the opening chapters of Mark, that's too bad, there are no early papyrus witnesses to the Gospel of Mark. At the SBL in New Orleans, 2009, Jeffrey Smith announced a new early papyrus from the 3rd or to 4th centuries, from Oxyrhynchus, that witnessed to the short reading. That was, by the way, also one of the reasons I wrote this article. I actually had Peter Head sitting beside me at that meeting, and he was cheering, you know, yes, another support, early support for the short reading. And that, then I really thought, okay, I had already begun a bit on Mark 1, but I thought, now I will show him. That's something of some metadata for you. That's the background. It contains Mark 1:1-2, and the first verse reads, Arche tu Evangelio Jesu tu Christu. There are at least two other Greek papyrus amulets with Mark 1:1, which have the long reading. And we can leave that. Because it was popular on amulets to use the opening verse of the gospel or so, probably to represent the whole gospel. So they kept it on amulets. Now to the patristic evidence. And a scholar named Robert M. Grant, he said something very important. Patristic citations are not citations unless they have been adequately analyzed. You have to look very carefully of the context, how this patristic author uses the text, how he is citing from memory or manuscripts, and Is he citing different texts at different points in his career and so on? So, Irenaeus first discusses the number of the four Gospels in Against Heresies 3:11-8 and compares the evangelists to the four creatures in Revelation 4:7. Focus is on the prophetic reference in Mark 1, verse 2. He skips from Arche to Evangelio in Mark 1:1 to the prophetic reference in verse 2. The citation does not support any of the two main readings. This was actually Peter had thought he was Irenaeus had the short reading with Jesu Christu, but it turned out that this edition, in a newer edition of Irenaeus' text, it was just Arche to Evangelio. There was something with that edition of Irenaeus' text, so I really got into that deep. You have also have to use the editions of a father's work with caution and trust. Look for new editions and better editions. On the other hand, Irenaeus cites the long reading of Mark 1:1 in two other passages in Against Heresies, but the texts are unfortunately only preserved in Latin. These citations still carry great weight, since it is plain from the argumentation that he is referring to the long reading. Thus, Irenaeus, being the earliest writer who cites the verse, definitely knew the long reading, whereas there is no secure evidence that he had access to the short reading. Further, his citation in Heresies 3:11-8 is the earliest example of what is probably a truncated text of Mark 1:1. Origen invariably cites the short reading in several passages in his commentary on the Gospel of John, in one passage in his commentary on Ephesians, and in Against Celsus, respectively. Origen's citations of Mark 1:1 appear in works written in distinct places, covering a long period of time. It is impossible to assign this particular reading to any specific text type or group of witnesses. And then Serapion of Tmuis cites Mark 1:1-2 in Against the Manichaeans 25 and 37, attesting to the short reading in both passages. Basil of Caesarea cites Mark 1:1-3 in the context of comparison of the Gospel Incipits in Against Eunomius 2:15. Basil points out that Mark has made John's proclamation the beginning of his Gospel. Although Basil attests to the short reading, it is quite possible that he has abbreviated the text because his main focus is on John the Baptist in the latter part of the verse, and he apparently also omits the major part of verse 2. Kirill of Jerusalem similarly wants to demonstrate how John the Baptist begins the new gospel era and cites only a part of Mark 1:1-4 in Catechesis ad Illuminandos 3:6-1, including the short reading. Since the abbreviation is explicit, the omitted part of the citation being represented by the word kaita hexes and so forth, explicitly uses this formula of abbreviation, this citation carries less weight as evidence for the short reading. Here you have examples how you must look specifically at contexts. Very good example. You can't use this as a support for the short reading. Epiphanius of Salamis also abbreviates his citation of Mark 1:3 for a similar reason. In Panarion 51:6-4, he emphasizes how Mark's gospel begins with the events of Jordan, and just like Irenaeus, he skips from Arche to Evangelio right to verse 2, so there is no way of knowing which text he had access to. An additional citation of Mark 1:1-2 appear in a collection of commentaries of homilies on the Psalms, probably written in Palestine or western Syria between 385-410 by an otherwise unknown Asterius. He cites the short reading in a homily on Septuagint Psalm 9, commentary in Psalmos 18:4. In the context, Asterius comments on the psalm heading in Psalm 9:1. He connects the Son to Jesus Christ, who marks the end, telos, of the law and the prophets, and the beginning, arche, of the new era of the proclamation of the gospel, as witnessed by Mark. Apart from the citation, the context also strengthened the case that Hugh Thu was not present in his Markan text, because then it would have provided him with yet another connection to the Son in Psalm 9:1. So in this case, he most probably only had the short reading, because it would, if he had the long reading, it would be perfect for him to make a point, which he didn't, connection between that psalm about the Son. So Severian of Gabala cites Mark 1:1-2 in De Sigillis Librorum 5. This work has been transmitted in the massive textual tradition of writings under the name of John Chrysostom. Unfortunately, there are only pre-critical editions of this work, the most recent by Montfaucon, reprinted in Mignes Patrologia Graeca. According to this edition, Severian cites the short reading in Mark 1:1. But at the same time, his comment seemed to presuppose the long reading. That's very important. That's a discrepancy between the comment on the verse where he seems to have the long reading. Upon examination of extant manuscripts, that is of Severian, the vast majority, 12 manuscripts, attest to the short reading. But on the other hand, two manuscripts with a longer reading, Jesu Christu Hiu Thu, generally preserve a better text. This circumstance, I should say that I had to turn to a scholar who had worked on Severian of Gabala. This was a Danish patrician, what's it called? Patristic scholar. Yeah. And he hadn't published an edition. He was planning to do so. He was old by now, he was retired, but he had microfilms in his home of this work. So he was kind enough to examine all these manuscripts, and he told me that, okay, these two actually have the long reading and they are considered best. So that was nice. I thank him in the footnote anyway. This circumstance, combined with the intrinsic evidence, make it probable that Severian's text included the long reading. In any case, the appeal to Severian in support of the short reading in UBS 4 is misleading. This is a general problem, I think, with the UBS edition, that sometimes the patristic evidence in that edition can be misleading, so have to be handled with care, especially UBS 4. Cyril of Alexandria cites the long reading of Mark 1:1 in Against Julian 10:330. In spite of a modern critical edition of this work, the evidence is solid, since Cyril explicitly appeals to the words Hugh Thu in his discussion of the nature of the Son, divine but made visible in the flesh to all. So now you're on safe ground when they are really making a point of their text. That's important also in the context. Hesychius of Jerusalem cites the short reading twice in a question with accompanying answer in his Collectio Difficultatum et Solutionum. The long reading is further attested in two works spuriously ascribed to Athanasius of Alexandria. Finally, among Greek authors, we may note a loose citation of Mark 1:1-2 in a Catena mark commonly attributed in the manuscripts to an unknown victor, presbyter of Antioch. The Catena seems to presuppose the long reading when it speaks of the beginning of the gospel of God's Son. The Latin church fathers almost unanimously cite the long reading, with the exception of Victorinus of Petau and Jerome. Victorinus cites the short reading in his commentary on the Apocalypse, but as Turner suggested, the text may be abbreviated. It is also quite possible that Victorinus has transferred the phrase Fili Dei from Mark 1:1 to a previous citation of Matthew 1:1, where it is uniquely placed. Hence, Victorinus' support for the short reading is doubtful, in my opinion. Jerome cites Mark 1:1 six times. In four cases, the long reading, and in two cases, the short. Probably he knew both readings, since he can cite either of them in very similar contexts when he comments on Mark's choice of attributing the prophecy in Mark 1:2 to Isaiah over Malachi. One may also note that in Jerome's recension of Victorinus' commentary on the Apocalypse, he did not change the short reading of Mark 1:1, in spite of many other changes, such as removing Fili Dei from the citation of Matthew 1:1, and changing the uncommon association of Mark with the eagle, attested also in Irenaeus, to the lion instead. To summarize the patristic evidence, we can conclude that Irenaeus, Faustus of Milevis, Ambrosiaster, Ambrose, Chromatius, Severian, Cyril of Alexandria, Pseudo Athanasius, and Pseudo Victor attest to the long reading of Mark 1:1, whereas Origen, Victorinus, Serapion, Basil of Caesarea, Cyril of Jerusalem, Asterius Ignotus, and Hesychius attest to the short reading. Further, Jerome probably knew both readings, and Epiphanius, who cites only the first part of the verse, attests to neither of them. Cyril of Jerusalem and Basil, who evidently also abbreviated their text as a whole, may have had access to the long version, as perhaps Victorinus. Moreover, Serapion's citation and argument may depend directly on Origen, but this is uncertain. Apparently, both readings have early and diverse patristic support. This is the point. However, there is a marked tendency on the part of some fathers to abbreviate the text for certain purposes, not seldom to highlight how Mark, in contrast to the other evangelists, begins his gospel with John the Baptist, marking the beginning of a new era. Thus, Irenaeus and Epiphanius can cite only the first part of Mark 1:1, Archetu Evangelium. They evidently took the divine sonship for granted and saw no problem in omitting an affirmation of Christ's divine sonship, or other parts of the citation for that matter. In spite of the fact that they were involved in the combat against adoptionistic heresies. In the light of this observable tendency to abbreviate the text, it is quite possible that several other authors have intentionally omitted Hugh Thu. Versional evidence. The long reading is attested by the following versions: Old Latin and Vulgate, Gothic, Peshitta, Philoxenian, and Herclean Syriac, at least two Sahidic Coptic textual groups, and the Bohairic Coptic, the Second Georgian recension, Ethiopic and Slavonic. Moreover, it is attested by 8 of 9 examined Arabic manuscripts. I should add on the Arabic, I have more on this in my journal version, that my article version, that the Arabic manuscripts are very often independent translations made from a Greek exemplar. So you can't regard that version as one version in the same way as the Old Latin or Coptic, maybe, or it's very, you know, independently made translations. So you have to look at every single Arabic manuscript often. And there was one Arabic manuscript with a short version. And that Arabic manuscript had very interesting readings. And there was a journal article in Novum Testamentum by Hikmat Kashu, who made a PhD in Birmingham. He has written a full-length article on that Arabic manuscript, which had many interesting readings. The short reading is attested by these versions. One valuable Sahidic Coptic manuscript, the Christian Palestinian Aramaic, the Armenian, the First Georgian recension, and one valuable Arabic manuscript. That was the one. Thus, the versional evidence on the whole is clearly in favor of the long reading, but at the same time confirms the impression that both readings are widespread. Then I have a small passage on text types and genealogy. The long reading is supported by all traditional text types, even a part of the C text, previously Caesarean, if such exists. At least it is thought to exist in Mark by some scholars. Whereas the short reading, in terms of identifiable text types, is attested by a few Alexandrian witnesses, a part of the potential C text, and one or two Latin fathers, possibly implying a divided Western text. And now on to internal evidence. And I will use my article version here, I think, since we have plenty of time left. Mark 1:1 can be understood either as the title, superscription, of the whole gospel, or in view of the syntactical difficulties when taken together with verse 2 and 3, as the heading of the initial section. Nevertheless, there are several similarities between Mark 1:1 and the typical titles of Jewish writings, including Matthew's Gospel, which open with an independent title or sentence, briefly indicating the content and other circumstances of the work. Many such titles, in fact, contain a Hios formula, right after the first mention of an author or subject of a book. However, there are other differences in comparison with Mark's opening that neutralize this intrinsic argument for Hiothu. Further, there is the corresponding argument from transcriptional probability that a scribe might have added the phrase in order to harmonize to similar titles. Indeed, titles or quasi-titles of books in general were often subject to various expansions by scribes. The argument from Markan's style is often appealed to in favor of the longer reading, since the idea of sonship forms a crucial theme in Mark, as you probably know, and would be appropriate to indicate in the title or introduction. On the other hand, Jan Slomp suggests that this stylistic argument could be turned the other way around, which often happens in textual criticism, by the way. First, he refers to Oscar Kuhlmann's important observation, and now I'm citing Oscar Kuhlmann. The writer's very infrequent use of the title, in spite of his fundamental attitude toward it, confirms our previous conclusions. Mark apparently has a very special understanding of the fact that it expresses the most secret and final revelation of the person and work of Jesus. Therefore, he tries to respect Jesus' own reserve in this matter by carefully leading the reader by a historical presentation alone to the centurion's confession. Perhaps it's along there, I'm not sure. I mean, it's gradually leading up to this great confession in the end of Mark's Gospel. This has to be God's Son, that's the point. In contrast to Kuhlmann, who accepted the long reading after all, Slomp points out that if the author wants to reveal the secret of the divine sonship gradually in respect to Jesus' own reserve, it is unlikely that he would give it away in the very first line. However, one could then ask why the name or title Christ is present. The Gospel of Jesus Christ. Jesus of Nazareth would have kept the secret, which is used in 1:9 and 24 and 10:47 and 14:67 and 16:6, Jesus of Nazareth. In fact, the full name Jesus Christ in Mark occurs only here, and Christ does not occur again until Peter's confession in Caesarea Philippi in chapter 8. And it is far from certain from the context that Mark regards Peter's confession of Jesus as the Christ as sufficient. On the other hand, the title Son of God is picked up already in chapter 1, verse 11. And the title more appropriately reflects Markan Christology. Hence, I find Edward Schweitzer's explanation more persuasive. And now I'm citing Edward Schweitzer. Mark sums it all up for his readers who are in on the secret by pointing them to the Son of God in 1:1. In conversation with earlier influential scholars, Adela Yarbrough Collins has clarified how the phrase Son of God would have been received by those members of Mark's audience who were more familiar with Greek and Roman religious traditions. She concludes that the centurion's acclamation, "This man really was the Son of God," in chapter 15, verse 39, links Mark's account of the death of Jesus with the imperial cult, and further that it would evoke a comparison of the emperor with Jesus and suggest that Jesus is the one whom the highest power has established as the ruler of the world. End of quote. I think Mark intended the same comparison by including the phrase Son of God in the very title or introduction of his work. Significantly, Craig Evans has noted several interesting parallels between Mark's incipit and the Priene calendar inscription in honor of Caesar Augustus, where the emperor, as frequently elsewhere, is referred to as divine. This piece of evidence suggests that it was Mark's intention to highlight the parallels to Roman traditions and practices concerning the ruler cult in the title or incipit, as well as in the whole gospel. Although Evans is careful not to presuppose the long reading in Mark 1:1, it seems to me that he has provided intrinsic evidence in its favor. In sum, the intrinsic evidence, specifically the argument from Mark and style, favors the long reading. Intrinsic evidence, that is, what is the author likely to have written? Intrinsic evidence. Now we go on to transcriptional evidence. What are the scribes likely to have copied or done in there? As we have seen in our discussion of Mark 1:1 as a title or incipit, transcriptional probability stands in direct opposition to intrinsic probability. The critic will find that this is often the case, since the scribes could potentially bring a passage into conformity with what they perceived as the author's style. So you see, it's balancing often these arguments. Hence, Peter Head suggests that, I'm quoting, the congruity of Son of God with Mark's presentation elsewhere actually makes the shorter reading the more difficult reading, which the one you should prefer then, the more difficult. It's much easier with the Son of God, which is a theme in the book. So. The question, however, is whether the scribes were really that perceptive of Mark and style. Head goes on to refer to Irenaeus to show how gospel incipits were used to summarize the whole message, something which Head thinks, quoting, would provide a plausible milieu for the addition of Son of God to the shorter reading, end of quote. Whereas he sees no plausible reason for its omission. However, the evidence, contrary to what Head thinks, shows that Irenaeus could omit not only Son of God, but also Jesus Christ, as we have seen, when he cited the opening of Mark. On the whole, the tendency in this milieu among patristic authors, if any, was to abbreviate the text of Mark 1:1. What many consider to be the decisive argument for the short reading relates to transcriptional probability in the specific context of the opening of a book. As Ehrman puts it, it should strike us as somewhat odd that the kind of careless mistake alleged to have occurred here, the omission of two rather important words, should have happened precisely where it does, within the first six words of the beginning of a book. End of quote. However, I would reply that Codex Sinaiticus, the correction of which Ehrman does not note in his discussion, is the earliest witness to the fact that an accidental omission indeed could occur in the opening of Mark. Either the exemplar had a series of six genitives with the U ending, or a series of four nomina sacra. You have that on your handout, yes. Either of which could easily lead to an oversight in copying due to homoiotelepton, which means the endings are similar, and you can skip over with the I, it's easy to forget something, on the part of this and other scribes. Significantly, and this is very important, the original scribe of Sinaiticus attests to similar omissions elsewhere, whether corrected or not. And there are examples in my journal article of that. Colin thinks the correction in Sinaiticus may be analogous to that in Codex 28. At first, the scribe of 28, Minuscule 28, apparently copied the abbreviation Jesu, Iota Ypsilon, with overbar, it's Norman Sacrum, but later returned to the passage and added the abbreviation for Christu, that's a chi and a ypsilon with overbar. It is therefore likely that the exemplar against which the correction was made in 28 did not include Hiuthu. You see, the scribe went back and added just Christu, realizing a mistake, and very likely that the exemplar had a short reading there. If Collins is correct that a similar procedure took place in Sinaiticus, then the words Huthu were probably present in the exemplar, and the original scribe went back to correct the passage accordingly. A recent exhaustive analysis and transcription of the manuscript, by the way, a large project in Birmingham, or led by a team in Birmingham, David Parker, you know, familiar with him, yeah? And you can look at Codex Sinaiticus on the web now. Very nice website, so you can scroll and read the whole thing. A recent exhaustive analysis and transcription of the manuscript confirms that this particular correction belongs to the earliest layer of corrections, either done by the scribe himself or an early corrector, and therefore you have the Siglum 1 on the manuscript, first corrector. Such a correction was most likely done before the manuscript left the scriptorium. Nevertheless, it is still possible that the exemplar of Sinaiticus lacked the words, but that the manuscript was corrected against a different exemplar in the scriptorium, which would then constitute an independent early witness for the long reading. This is something of a project for a PhD, maybe. To look at the pattern of corrections in Sinaiticus. But you already have subjects here. Well, neither Ehrman, Head nor Collins discuss what took place in minuscule 1555, in which there is also a correction in Mark 1:1. Significantly, additional evidence has come to light since the publication of their studies, which in my opinion proves beyond doubt that omissions of this phrase in the opening of Mark occurred on several occasions independently in the textual tradition. Since Mark 1:1 was chosen as one of the test passages for the major evaluation of manuscripts, text on text vert, undertaken by the Institute for New Testament Textual Research in Münster, we now have access to virtually complete textual data of the extant tradition. It turns out that several Byzantine witnesses, not noted by these authors, witnessed to the short reading. And you have them on the handout. I think they are on the external evidence. If you look at your first page, you can see that you have several Byzantine minuscules attesting to the short reading. And that's quite astonishing, I think. But you can also see that many of them have been correct. That's why they have an asterisk. This is the first hand of the manuscript, and they have been corrected. So you find them on the attesting to the long reading, the corrected version. So what is going on here? An examination of the textual data in the 196 test passages shows that these witnesses are not immediately related to one another, although they all attest to the Byzantine text. Hence, it is very likely that the exemplar of each of them included the words Huthu in accordance with the majority text, but that the phrase was accidentally omitted by these scribes independently. In some of the manuscripts, the mistake was corrected, three of them, in analogy with what I assume has taken place in Codex Sinaiticus. Do you understand the argument here, some of you? We have Byzantine minuscules, and it's very likely that they have the long reading, almost a complete majority text tradition, what became the dominant text type in the Byzantine church. As the long reading. Here you have a couple of manuscripts in that stream which have the attest to the short reading, and half of them are corrected. So scribes, I think, Byzantine scribes made mistakes in the opening of Mark. And that's a very strong sign of it, I think. In addition, it is clear from other passages in the New Testament that accidental omissions of nomina sacra in genitive forms could certainly occur in the beginning of books. For example, Codex Augensis F omits Jesu Christu in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 1. Codex 489 omits Tutheu in the same verse. The first hand of Codex Claromontanus, D 06, omits Jesu in Titus chapter 1 verse 1, which is then corrected. And Codex 206 omits Christou in 1 Peter 1 and 1. In addition, in Mark 1:1, the old Latin witness, VL 11a, uniquely omits the nomen sacrum for God in the genitive, it's D in Latin, of the son Fili. So it's just son Fili. If the short reading is original, however, the phrase "hiuthou" must have been added deliberately at some point. There are several possible explanations for the addition. We have already considered a potential harmonization of the book title, but we must now also take into account a possible pious expansion of the divine name. Already Tischendorf, who is incidentally is known to have placed too much confidence in Codex Sinaiticus, stated that it, and I'm quoting him, it would be absurd to say that such words, that is, hiuthou, would more likely be removed by modest faith than be inserted by overzealous piety. Similarly, Head thinks the addition reflects a general tendency on the part of the scribes to expand Christologically loaded titles. He further points out that, I'm quoting, in no other passage in the Gospels is there any evidence that Son of God was ever omitted from the text. But, end of quote. But as he claims, there are many examples of the addition of the phrase. His first example is from Mark 8:29, but it is obvious that the addition there represents a harmonization from the parallel in Matthew 16:16, rather than a pious expansion. Head's second example is the addition of the phrase to Matthew 1:1 by the Latin father Victorinus. But as I have argued, it may represent a transposition of the phrase from his citation of Mark 1:1, it's in the very same context, by that Latin father Victorinus. In regard to the addition in the dialogue of Timothy and Aquila, again, it is necessary to examine the context. Aquila the Jew has asked the Christian Timothy how Jesus is the Son of God. Timothy replies by citing some passages, including the genealogy in Matthew 1, verse 2 to 16. However, the addition of Son of God after Christ at the end of this citation is unique and represents the concluding point and answer to Aquila's question rather than a part of the citation proper. In fact, Matthew 1:16 is cited twice in the dialogue without the addition. Head's proposed addition of the phrase in Matthew 13:37 in Codex 28 is really a substitution for Hios to Anthropou, written with Nomina Sacra. So we already have Hios there. So to Anthropou is changed to Tuthu in that. Similarly, in Mark 14:61, all witnesses already have Hohios, whereas the addition of Tuthu in Codex Sinaiticus and 579 rather represents a substitution for Tu Evlogetu, the Blessed. The textual crux in John 1:18, Monogenos Theos or Monogenes Hios, is well known, but the presence of both elements, Monogenes Hios Theou, in many manuscripts, is obviously a conflation, or alternatively, a harmonization to 3:18, but not an addition of the full phrase. Finally, in John 6:69, Tu Theou is already present in all witnesses, whereas Hohios has replaced Hohagios in the majority of manuscripts. Evidently, Head does not present any clear-cut example of the addition of Son of God in the manuscript tradition, except the harmonization in Mark 8:29, where scribes already had an excuse to supplement the text on the basis of a parallel. The example of additions do include several substitutions and conflations of individual elements, but on the other hand, there are many other examples in the manuscript tradition where these same elements have been omitted or replaced. For example, some witnesses probably omit Tuthu in Matthew 6:33, in fact, Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. A few manuscripts replaced to Theou with ton uranon in John 3:5, Sinaiticus firsthand, and a few others. Some witnesses substitute Hu to Anthropu for Hu to Theou in John 5:25. Codex 489 omits to Theou in 2 Corinthians 1:1. Codex 330 omits to Theou in Galatians 2:20. Some witnesses omit to Hu before to Theou in Ephesians 4:13. Codex Sinaiticus again omits to Theou in Hebrews 12, verse 2. Interesting to find that Codex Sinaiticus keeps omitting this nomina sacra. That's the best witness for the short text. I didn't make a big point of that, but it's there. Ehrman is more specific about the phrase under discussion. He thinks the words were added in order to circumvent an adoptionistic reading of the inaugurating event of baptism, making, I'm citing him, a slight modification of Mark's opening words so that now they affirm Jesus' status as the Son of God prior to his baptism. End of quote. As Collins notes, this is an interesting thesis but difficult to prove. The question is whether such a subtle addition would really have been effective against adoptionistic Christology. In any case, the Church Fathers, as we have seen, Irenaeus and Epiphanius, who both specifically battled adoptionism, apparently could abbreviate the text of Mark 1:1, which indirectly suggests that the short reading of this passage was probably not used by their opponents. In conclusion, the intrinsic argument for the long reading reviewed in this section is balanced by the corresponding argument from transcriptional probability, that is, scribes may have added the phrase Son of God in Mark 1:1 in conformity with what they perceived as the author's style. Contrary to what has been claimed, however, there is no example of the addition of the phrase in other passages in the manuscript tradition that can offer an adequate analogy. It is true that divine titles, in general, were sometimes expounded. However, this tendency is balanced in Mark 1:1 by the opposite demonstrable tendency to omit nomina sacra due to homoiotelepton in this and other passages, including several other book openings. Conclusion. The external evidence clearly favors the inclusion of Hu Theou in Mark 1:1. The long reading has the earliest and strongest support by manuscripts, as well as versional and patristic witnesses, and the text types to which the witnesses have traditionally been assigned. The short reading has early and widespread, but much weaker support. The internal evidence to which the defenders of the short reading have normally appealed is actually ambiguous. The traditional intrinsic argument from Mark and Stiel in favor of the long reading is possibly balanced by the corresponding possibility of a stylistic scribal addition. In regard to transcriptional probability, an early accidental omission, even in the opening of a book, cannot be ruled out, since this apparently happened on several occasions in the history of transmission in Mark 1:1 and elsewhere. This argument, however, is balanced by the general tendency to expound book titles as well as divine names and titles. In conclusion, the balance of probabilities favors the long reading in Mark 1:1. The Son of God was indeed in the beginning.